Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Mike, I felt like the show ended with something of a just traditional, straightforward angle, if you can count that, with special effect red lights and a demon showing up, you know, ostensibly out of nowhere. You had heels doing a bad thing to Babyface, who isn't a top-tier established singles wrestler. He has his cohorts help him, and the Babyface challenger comes to the rescue. And we end with a scene of the Babyface getting the advantage, and the champ and the announcers asking, will this be the scene on Sunday? Will this be the end of this terrible but prestigious title reign? I mean, sometimes it's fun to just watch a kind of a paint-by-numbers build to a pay-per-view match that just isn't trying to be too clever, and it's just kind of letting the wrestlers themselves be their characters and build that way. I thought it was, you know, fine. And I mean, for people who are really into the demon and really want to see Reigns lose the title, it felt like kind of a high energy finish to the show. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty standard, went about as I expected, I suppose. I didn't call everything as it happened, except the table collapsing early. I definitely predicted that happening when Ford stepped up onto the announce table and it just went out completely under his weight.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty could bode well for the Street Profits come Sunday, because I feel like this sort of further reinforces my thought that Roman's definitely going to defeat the demon one way or another come Sunday. But the treatment of Ford tonight, I'm thinking, could fuel the fire of the Street Profits to maybe go over the Usos in their match. And then it's kind of a nice split that way. So, like you said, paint by numbers, and it made sense. It worked.
Yeah, sometimes things get a little too clever, and they don't need to be, because, you know, wrestling is about establishing wrestlers who fans like, taking on wrestlers fans want to see lose and get embarrassed and get shown up, and you make sure that you have a framework where it seems like the payoff match will have a finish and something will be settled one way or the other, and establish the stakes are high and prestigious. And if you've hired the right people and frame them the right way, it can be simple and fun to watch these things play out. And Roman is super talented, and Finn Balor is super talented, and the demon thing adds a little extra to it. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying angle of the year, but, you know, when you just look at it, it's sometimes nice to see. We didn't hear references to catering. You know, we don't have ambiguity of who the hero is here. And it's just kind of refreshing. Sometimes we just want simple and entertain us with something simple and where the lines are drawn pretty clearly. And I thought that's what we got tonight.
Yep. And they pretty recently, if not tonight, they announced that this match, Roman and the demon, Finn Balor, would be under extreme rules conditions. So there's that added bit of flair for the match to bring it up to speed with the title of the pay-per-view that it happens to be on. Those two were going to have a good match anyway, and now there's that anticipation for what the extra violence that might take place. And we got a little taste of that tonight, because Balor went to town on all the members of the Bloodline with the chairs and the kendo stick. So I think that was also in there to kind of whet the appetites of the audience to prepare them for the Extreme Rules come Sunday.
For sure, yeah. And it was Reigns getting handed the chair by the Usos, and then Balor making the comeback with the kendo stick. So we kind of got a tease of two different weapons that might be being used. You know, the idea that this is a Extreme Rules match should stem from what we saw tonight, not be announced before what we saw tonight, but it just wasn't really convenient to do it that way. But whatever, you know, that's a small detail. I assume we're going to get more Crown Jewel hype starting next week, but they keep just kind of dropping Lesnar's name into the conversation throughout the show in just ways to make sure that we know he's there, and you never know when he's going to show up and he's on Paul Heyman's mind. But, you know, the focus here is on trying to get people to watch on Peacock so they can brag about how many people watched, even though not immediate money is on the line. This isn't like a pay-per-view or trying to get people to buy it, or even for that matter, an exclusive WWE Network subscription. It's more ambiguous, you know, how many people subscribing or unsubscribing to Peacock are because of what's happening on Sunday. So there's a little bit less incentive, and I think it comes across in the lineup and the sense of urgency. There is sort of a sense of going through the motions. We know what we're doing. We're not desperate to the final show before the pay-per-view tonight. But like I said, I thought it was kind of refreshing. It didn't feel frenetic or desperate. It just was, let's just kind of go do our thing. And then we'll certainly talk about Becky and Bianca too as the co-main event on that show on Sunday. Mike, I haven't asked you yet what you thought of the introduction of the Demon as part of this. Is this a good use of the Demon? Is it elevating the match, or does it sort of feel like, well, we didn't have anyone else. It's not Brock. It's not Big E. It's not a big match. So we'll just give this guy, who we haven't treated with great prestige on the main roster for quite a while before and after his return, we better give him a little something extra. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think if they had done it with just regular Finn Balor and the Demon never came into the equation, it would be kind of like people would just kind of yawn and look away, like a total foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no disrespect to Finn, but that's just where we are right now in the, like, the climate of the show.
Yeah.
But what you can do if everyone in the writer or somebody in the writer's room remembers it is engage Demon mode for Finn. And if nothing else, for me, it's still pretty much a foregone conclusion. But now you have to think it's going to be a more unique match. There's going to be something else to it. And the something else to it might just be the fact that it's going to be an Extreme Rules match where they do a bunch of crazy stuff that is of a pay-per-view caliber. And, yeah, I just think it is Finn next level. There's more pomp and circumstance. The crowd, I think, gets behind it more. So, yeah, it's just like next level Finn, and it's still, I feel, a stopgap, just a more interesting one.
Yeah. You know, I don't think at Finn Balor's age and how he has been utilized, not in a super protected way, to put it lightly, I just don't feel like the Demon is this big money gimmick that needs to be protected. I know some people are nostalgic for that thought, but I think we're past it, and now it really is a tool to just give you a little something extra going into a B-level pay-per-view, which frankly, you know, in September, we're at B-level stage. You know, it's past SummerSlam, it's not Survivor Series, it's not the Rumble or Mania, but, you know, they want to keep it interesting. So I think they succeeded. You know, even if you just think it's a foregone conclusion, Reigns wins, like you said, they've added that sense of you're going to see weapons get used. It's going to be brutal and violent, and they amp things up at the end of the show. And with only 48 hours to go, you know, it's sort of a to be continued. And all right,
one last thing. I think it's fine use of the Demon to have the Demon's first loss be against Roman Reigns in this title reign. I think that's perfectly fine.
It is a bragging point that Heyman might even cite, Mike.
Yep.
I could imagine him doing that. Yep. All right, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then get to phone calls and emails and our on-site correspondent. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 24th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. I founded the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and launched the website pwtorch.com and have covered professional wrestling full-time as my job for decades, ever since I graduated college. It has been, well, actually, it was a full-time job during college, but it has been quite the journey through a lot of technologies and a lot of eras, and this is a very exciting era, and we've got our Dynamite post show up right now, third highest viewership ever for AEW Dynamite, but came up short, very close, but short of beating Raw in the core 18 to 49 demo this week. We've got full details on the aforementioned pwtorch.com on that. We also talked on the flagship episode of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. This is our post-show feed, but on the podcast feed, the blue feed, we Zach Haydorn and I reacted in real time to the ratings coming in and talked about what we thought of those numbers. So if you haven't yet, go ahead and download the flagship. Talked about the dark side of the ring, Ric Flair, Tommy Dreamer. We talked about AEW Dynamite. We answered a lot of email questions on AEW and WWE. So go ahead, check that out. Search Wade Keller. Subscribe to the Blue Logo Show. And also, while you're at it, subscribe to this, the post-shows, the Red Logo Show. And you'll be set with a different podcast every day of the week for free. You can also get those ad-free. Support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That's patreon.com/ PW Torch VIP for $4.99. Get all those shows ad-free, plus all the PW Torch daily casts ad-free, and bonus content. And our post show on Dynamite, by the way, is up on this feed right under this show. So if you missed that, haven't hit download on that yet, check out our immediate coverage of that third most viewed episode of Dynamite ever with CM Punk's promo, the return of Cody Rhodes against Malakai Black, Ruby Soho getting her first AEW title shot against Britt Baker, probably more to come, and the first ever Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson match. VIP members on Patreon and our VIP website got to read minute-by-minute details of how the audience ebbed and flowed during that two-hour show and which segment did best and when there was a drop-off. So lots of perks going VIP. Check it out. All right. My co-host, the other voice you've heard so far in our discussion here on tonight's episode of SmackDown, is Mike Myers. He is a PWTorch.com contributor and a frequent co-host here on the post show. Usually, if not always, have you done, you did Raw at least once, didn't you? A Raw post show?
I think so. It was a while ago.
Yeah. That's why I was trying to, you know, confirm with you. But I thought at least once you did a Raw show, but mostly a SmackDown post show co-host, Mike Myers. Welcome back.
Yeah, the Fridays work well with my schedule, and thanks for having me here, Wade. It's good to be back. And it's been a while since it's been you and I. I was with Zach last time, and we've got intercepted like twice trying to do this, but what with the bizarre NFL programming in our markets.
Yeah, that's right. The last time, it was just a few weeks ago, we were going to do a show together, and neither of us had the live feed. I didn't know I could just watch it on the Fox app until the show was already in progress. So I kind of caught up, but you didn't see it at all. We made arrangements, did a two-host roundtable where I hosted but leaned on the other host. So, yeah, we called an audible, and it worked out this time because we're in the heart of NFL season. How's your team doing?
They're the Lions, so, you know, 0-16, I'm not sure. I follow very loosely.
Yeah, not yet. Vikings are 0-2, but it's a bad fumble call and a slightly missed field goal that has kept us from being 2-0. And even the coach is sort of upbeat. Just keep playing like that, even though you're 0-2, and you'll be fine. So we'll see Sunday against the Hawks. All right, let's get back to SmackDown. And we invite you, as always on these post shows, to give us a call. It's a cool format. Take advantage of it. You don't have to listen live all the time because most of you download the show later and listen on your podcast app. But you are invited to and encouraged to join us live and contribute your thoughts and questions live. To do that, just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown end and click on the live stream link. We also have a direct link to the show page for each of our post shows that'll take you right to the live stream after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown on our Twitter feed, at PW Torch, right around the time the show ends, and also in my TV reports at pwtorch.com, our main news, results, and editorial website, updated multiple times throughout the day every day, including my live report on Extreme Rules on Sunday. So we'd love to have first-time callers. We are throwing out an invite. We'd love to hear from female callers. We know from looking at television there are women who attend wrestling events. We know from our stats that apparently there are female listeners of our show. We'd love to hear from more of you and get your perspective too. But we also love our crew of regulars. Our phone number, if you want to call us on tonight's show, if you're listening live, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard. And then we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us if that works better for you with your thoughts and questions. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Speaking of pwtorch.com, that's where you can find Mike Myers' reports on WWE Main Event. Mike, before I take our first call, what's been going on Main Event lately?
Pretty much the same old thing. I try to take note if something like unusual happens, but the show is pretty formulaic. Stood out to me tonight to tie tonight's show somehow into Main Event is that Riddick Moss appeared to help out Corbin. And the last time I recall hearing or seeing anything about Riddick Moss was doing a Main Event report. So not only has he crossed over from like Raw to SmackDown for whatever he's doing with Corbin, but the last time he was on my radar was doing the Main Event report for the Torch. So yeah, Riddick Moss is from main under the Main Event rock to SmackDown. So I guess good for him.
Yeah. It was just kind of a weird thing. that he is now with Happy Corbin. I'm not quite sure what to expect of that pairing, but we shall see.
A lot of laughing, apparently.
Yes, apparently so. I suspect one of our callers will bring it up, or else we'll bring it up. But speaking of callers, let's get to our phone lines. We've got a call from Nova Scotia. It looks like area code 902. Go ahead, state your name. You're the first caller up today.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello. Hi, Wade. I was watching a SmackDown, and I always
read
your...
Hold on, 902. Give us your name and where you're calling from. That's the rule.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Name is Andy from Prince Edward Island in Canada. Not Nova Scotia,
excellent.
But it's the same area code.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was watching a SmackDown, and I always read your report to see what you comment, and I was surprised of how harsh were you with Liv Morgan. Even was so surprised that I came back to watch, because I sometimes record it just to see what exactly was going on. And yes, she was having some weird movement, but I didn't see it like some type of the diva era type. Like, I don't know, it was weird, but not to that point. And the thing of watch me in the ass, she has always had that. It's more like that's how I see it, at least. Like, watch me do my thing, not like you said, like trying to convey to the horniments. Like, I found it harsh for you for your part. Yeah, it was weird, but not to the point that how you say it. Like,
well, first of all, thank
you.
You will
find a few angry guys after you just in the comments. So.
No, Andy, thank you. First of all, I appreciate it. I have no problem and encourage people, if they read something in my report and they take issue with it. I thank you for reading the report, and I consider my analysis starting points for discussions. I'm glad you reminded me that was my reaction to it, because right now, Liv Morgan is getting touted from people I know behind the scenes as a rising star, someone that WWE is even putting on a pay-per-view. You know, it's like being on a pay-per-view on Sunday. That's a prestigious position to be in. Becky Lynch is a heel in part because they're positioning her, and I think she wants to be positioned to help elevate wrestlers rising through the ranks. And so I've been looking at Liv Morgan with more scrutiny than I had in the past, because I think the goal with her is for her to be a star. And when she came out and did a little, you know, hip swivel dance, shook her chest a little bit, It just came across as something I would have seen. And, you know, it's not quite what beautiful people were doing in TNA during that era, but I feel like she deserves to have a persona that isn't just a TNA type. And I mean that in the, not the wrestling company way, tits and ass way, where that's, she's shaking her stuff and winking at the guys in the crowd going, hey, I like you. I think she deserves something more than that. I know there's guys out there who like that. I'm not denying that. I'm saying she deserves a gimmick where her ring entrance isn't shaking her stuff and smiling like she's heading to the ring for a pole dance. And so it did remind me of that. I think other women are moving away from that, and I'm trying to kind of shake the default mode that maybe she and WWE are in by making that comment, that it's time to kind of rethink that. You know, the lace leggings and shaking her stuff on her way to the ring, I don't consider that a top-level gimmick. And by the way, Carmella's doing it as a heel act. So that's my take. Andy, I'm going to go back to you for a response, but I want to get Mike's thoughts on this too. I don't know if you paid any attention to the ring entrance, but I did. But in either specifically or in general, how do you feel about my stance?
I didn't notice. See, Liv, maybe this is my response. Liv Morgan is pretty much off my radar. Like, I don't have strong feelings about her one way or another. I don't think of her as a diva era leftover who doesn't belong in the ring, nor do I think of her as a future ring general. Nor do I really see her as, like, with the glowing charisma of a future star. She's just one of the women on the roster to me. So, anyway, I didn't pick up on those things, but I do want to underline what you said, that I don't think any women should have that be their gimmick. Like, that should be the total exception, you know,
because
they should, as a whole, the majority of the people on the roster should be angled as like a combat sport, with and the competitors should have a desire to win matches and championships. You mentioned Carmella. I was going to, if you didn't, I would consider her an exception because she plays that so perfectly in a heel role. And that works. That works for her, and it can work for the role. And I think Carmella is especially talented in that she doesn't have to do that. I don't think she's limited to that because we saw – I mean, she had a comedy tour, basically, with R-Truth, and she was effective in that role as well, I think. But, that's what I think about that that kind of leftover way to portray women on the roster.
Yep. So, Andy, I said a lot. Okay. Mike said backed me up there. I'd like your thoughts.
Okay, no, I don't see her like a future champion. But someone in the roster, like Mike said, like another body. But what I think now that you mentioned that she was, because this is the first time that I saw her doing that, so I haven't seen her doing that before. And since Carmella doing it, like, it could be, I mean, because I never saw her. I saw her doing that. It's like maybe she was doing to mock Carmella, because, again, I haven't never seen her do that type of thing. I don't see her playing like that before. So I'm trying to defend her just because I found it weird and I haven't seen that before. But, again, so that's how
I just wanted, when I made that comment and said it the way that I said it, it comes from baggage about the way that that men who run this wrestling industry, white, middle-aged, and older men, have objectified women in a way over the decades, where if you see a pretty blonde who's got nice curves, well, that's what we're going to patronize our fans with. We're going to have them accentuate the sex appeal and have them dance to the ring like they want your vote for a wet t-shirt contest. And I think WWE has made it clear in their marketing that that's not what they're all about. And I think with a lot of women, it's clear that's not what the other women are doing. And I do think Liv, if there are people rooting for her, and Becky is one of them, by the way. When Becky left, she said when she came back, she wanted Liv Morgan to be a star when she came back to work with her. I think Liv is seen as a project right now to elevate. And I am applying more scrutiny to her. And I'm also bringing the baggage of the dirty men from the Mad Men era treatment of women and going, hey, let's put some more thought into Liv Morgan than having her wiggle her stuff and wink and smile at the audience. Like, she's, again, heading to the ring to earn votes for a wet t-shirt contest. She deserves more thought than that, and I want her to redo her gimmick. I want her to redo her presentation that feels more like an athlete who's trying to aim for a championship, not just titillate men in the crowd. And that's what I saw tonight, again, applying more scrutiny than usual to her than I would because of what I'm hearing about how optimistic and aspirational they are about her push.
Okay. The other point that I was going to make is about the match between Roman and Montez. While it was a good match, not a great match, but I thought it was going to be more of a showcase for Montez, but it wasn't. Like, I thought it was going to present Montez better. Like, again, it wasn't bad. He was, batting Roman Reigns, which that by itself is great. But, he didn't look like a star, at least from my point of view. Yeah, he looked good, but that wasn't, the point that you can say, okay, from this point on, you can count on Montez. Like, I didn't see that in this match. And he wasn't presented to be that either, which is the point that I was a little bit surprised by.
Yeah, great point to bring up, and certainly a big focus of the show. We talked at the top about the Balor angle at the end, but... Montez Ford being in that position in the main event, being given about 14 minutes to go back and forth with Reigns, I thought was a bit of an elevation for Ford. It felt like getting to last that long and get in as much offense as he did felt like an elevation for a tag team wrestler who hasn't really been protected as a single star. But Mike, Andy thinks it wasn't a showcase for Montez. What was your thoughts on that as you watched it?
I think anybody who isn't at the top tier alongside Roman, who can last that long in a match against him, and it's not a situation where Roman is toying with you like a cat would with a mouse, I think that serves to elevate. So if Montez is on the level beneath Roman, like maybe the same level as the Usos, then I think he held his own, and therefore that elevates him because he held his own with the guy who's been champ for over a year and pretty dominant. It wasn't the sort of match where thinking like, oh, multiple believable near falls for Ford, you know. But I don't know that that's what they were even trying to tease us with, because at the moment, Ford's just half of the challenging tag team, you know. So it would be almost a little off the rails for him to have like this premier match where he goes toe to toe and almost wins. You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't think it has to have gone to that extreme for Ford to still be elevated.
I'm with Mike on that, Andy. What do you think?
No. I agree. Okay. Let me put it this way. I agree with that. I wasn't thinking that he was going to take to the next level. But I thought it was going to be more of a showcase, and I don't, like, again, it was better than what we have seen from other Western. It's just I was a little bit surprised because I thought it was going to be more. It's not that it was bad and I'm complaining, because, you know, I was just surprised that I thought it was going to be more, but no more than that.
Sure. Yeah. No, fair enough. I just don't think this is quite the time for that. And in a way, you don't want to tease fans with something more than you're going to get. And this is not Montez's Ford. It's not his time to get a push where he would seem like he could compete more than I think he did tonight. I think you want to save that for when you're really going to get behind him. And right now he was there to fill some TV time with a good match, hold his own. But basically he was there to fill time until they got to the Finn Balor angle afterwards.
And I'm pretty certain he be showcased on Sunday in a big way.
As you pointed out, Mike. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I have nothing to say, so I thank you guys for taking my calls and spend some time with me. So if you appreciate.
Sure. Yeah, call again. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, Andy. Andy from Prince Edward Island, Canada. Good to hear from Canada. We'll now move to William in San Diego. You're up. William, have you seen SmackDown?
Yes. Hey, I have.
How you guys doing? Well, then you're called the right show. Good. How you doing?
Yes, I am. Just wanted to ask what you guys thought about the Becky and Bianca segment. It's kind of been like a roller coaster ride for me with this whole Becky heel turn. Sometimes I'm kind of for it. Sometimes I'm kind of against it. This week, I'm not entirely sure how to feel about it because, I mean, if the goal is to elevate Bianca even further as a baby face, it kind of feels weird if she's coming out and she's getting mixed reactions and Becky's also getting mixed reactions. And so I'm looking forward to the match on Sunday, especially after seeing all the positive stuff that from their match at the UK tour. But the whole Becky being a heel thing has put like a weird vibe over the entire feud. So what do you guys think about the segment and just,
Yeah, Mike, we could have led the show with that. Just happened to start with Balor and Reigns and that hype. But I thought it wasn't my favorite of their interactions so far. I felt that anytime that they lean into the EFT thing really hard, I feel like Bianca loses something. Bianca is a mega star if you strip away WWE's usual kind of gimmickry that they often incorporate into wrestlers' characters who need something extra. Like maybe Liv Morgan needs something extra, you know, something distinct that she can lean on as sort of a hook. But Belair, I think, her background is this straight-up excellent athlete. But having her just, you know, self-brag and lean into this whole EST thing as much as she did on this promo, I think is when I lose, and I think the audience does. I think I sense it. They lose cheering her on her journey, and they sort of think she just expects you to recognize how great she was the day she arrived in WWE because she's been great her whole life at everything. And I thought Becky did a good job pushing back against that or seeming more petulant, just like unlikable enough to balance it out a little bit. But I don't like it as much as usual. I want Bianca Belair to be more herself and less in EST wrestler gimmick mode. And I think she just shines so much when she is her natural self. And when you watch WWE TV, there's so, in Montez Ford too, it's just turned up so much, and they're just such characters. And to me, be cartoonish and caricature-ish when you're being Otis and Chad Gable at the mid-card level. But Bianca's main event, and I think she should just be more straightforward who she is in real life. I think that is what is going to help her be the biggest draw possible and the most likable, and then make it easier for Becky to seem like the heel in situations like that. So that's my take on Bianca. You can talk, Mike, about Bianca and also how Becky's doing in her attempt to get people to boo her.
Yeah, I feel like since this has developed, like William said, he said it felt like a roller coaster, and I feel similar. I feel like there's always things for me to nitpick, and I don't just mean like if you had to, Mike, nitpick something. I mean, I always notice there's always something that doesn't ruin it, but that just is something simple that prevents it from being better more simply. The EST thing that you mentioned, it's simple to remove that stuff because it doesn't sound natural, but WWE doesn't like that because, like you call it, Wade, that would be a lack of gimmickry for her to not recite those EST things. But when I hear that, it sounds like an unnatural script and not something that she would say. You mentioned she's a natural athlete and she's competed at high levels, and she's probably used to talking about her competitions at high levels, but I doubt that she was ever proclaiming herself the EST. And I don't know if that falls into the whole be yourself idea, but turned up to 11. Because just amping up your personality is one thing, but saying things that nobody ever says is different. Like that doesn't fit onto that scale of, you know, 1 to 11. As for Becky, I've been saying the good news for this is that I do feel that it's plainly a babyface and a heel now, where earlier on it was hard for me to tell what they really wanted us to feel. Now, with that being said, I still think that they're mixing signals with Becky, at least. I think they need to eliminate, unless she's not going to be a heel for very long, they need to eliminate Becky's music and get her something else, because I feel like there's this automatic trigger for the crowd when they hear her music kick in. They cheer. It's like a Pavlov's dog, you know?
Mike, I wrote in my report, and I felt the same thing. The crowd is like, yeah, Becky. Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, she's different now. Like, exactly that.
And I even thought, like, well, keep the melody, but just redo the song in, like, a low-key, darker, slower way. They did something like that with Nakamura a couple years ago because people would habitually sing his song, but when he was a heel, they kind of omitted the melody and then laid in some rhymes over the top of it. So in a way that wasn't as singable as before. So that's what she needs. And the other part of it is that she's still like trotting down the ramp, holding the belt up and smiling in a way that looks like a babyface champion. And I've said this before, but it doesn't hit me like a sarcastic, like making fun of the audience thing. It just, her entrance feels like babyface Becky Lynch. And then she like flicks a switch when she climbs through the ropes. And from then forward, I find her pretty effective, even when I don't find Bianca's shtick very natural because of the scripting. Becky is still really good for it to bounce off of. I think Becky's behavior, once she gets past that that mixed signal has been really good. Or I liked it tonight, anyway.
Great points. I'm with you on all of that. I'll go back to William, get his take on follow up on anything we said, because I'm with you. It's a roller coaster ride, and I think they're still trying to find their way. And some weeks if you listen to me every week, I'm really high on what they do. And this one, I was more middle of the road and maybe a little under, maybe a slight thumbs down to, again, just stop leaning in on the EST crap. It's too heavy-handed and heelish, and it's self-absorbed and self-raggedocious and all this stuff. And there's a time where you can do that when she's firmly established as a mega successful long-term star and she's thrown it in the face of heels. But that's not her story right now, and it takes away from – it's almost like she's achieved everything, and every bit of success she has is just expected. And it's not a surprise. She's not surprised by it. And I just don't think that's a really exciting journey for fans to jump on board with her on. And, again, it's just WWE's default mode of, well, that's her thing, EST. The ponytail and EST. So there's a way you have to lean on. And it's like she has so much more to offer than that. That's so much more grounded in reality and relatable. William.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I noticed too, was I thought she was overdoing it with the whole EST thing tonight. Up to this week, felt like she was kind of dialed down a little, but tonight
yep.
she leaned into it a lot. And it was especially kind of jarring because she started her promo by saying something like, "Oh, I know you beat me at SummerSlam and you got the best of me last week," but at that point it doesn't really matter what comes after that, but because she's already been getting the better of you for consistently, and you're trying to pivot into talking about how much better you are than Becky. So it was kind of an uphill battle from that point. So kind of related to that, how much do you guys think is riding on Sunday? Is it pivotal for Bianca to win, or what do you guys think?
Mike, I think with the draft, I mean, it just depends. I mean, there's a lot of finishes they could do, and some, you know, hurt more than others. But if Becky keeps the title and Baylor gets drafted to Raw, you know, I mean, I think it's fine. I think there is a bit of whatever happens before the draft sort of doesn't count as much because there just doesn't seem to be kind of that the wake of what happens if you switch shows and you're in a whole new atmosphere. So I'm not I would say there's less riding on the finish than if Belair had to show up on the same show after losing to Becky and just move down the card. But it feels like if Becky caught Belair unexpectedly and Belair's stance is you're scared to face me, and I thought that was a high point of the interview is Belair saying it seems like you're nervous about facing me when you don't have the element of surprise. And I wish that was more of the focus and Becky had a chance to play off of that more and go, oh, no, that's not at all why I won. I would beat you under any circumstance. Like, but have her seem not so sure as she's pretending to put up a brave front. Like, to me, that's getting fans excited to see Belair dish it out to Becky. But if that's not the finish, if that's not the story they're telling on Sunday, I'm curious how they tell their story, because if they get split up in the draft and Becky gets the last one up on Belair, that is a real momentum stopper for Belair, and I think it's kind of hard to recover. So I think Sunday's a big show, but for Belair, but I will say because of the draft, I think it means less. So Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about tonight. Like if I'm thinking about the Extreme Rules card, I kind of think that Lynch and Belair should be the main event, because I have more questions around that match than,
yeah,
say, Balor and Roman Reigns. But even with that said, I still, and I admittedly, I don't put a ton of thought into the draft. Like, the idea of predicting the draft is not an exciting one for me, but I would be more concerned if the draft weren't here that Belair was going to get wrecked by this, because Becky Lynch is like a made star already, and Belair is like on the cusp of that and a dangerous place to be in. So if they're going to have Becky retain on Sunday, then I can only hope that it's to whisk Belair away from her and to do something, you know, equally awesome on a different show in a way that we won't be thinking about this. We're not going to be dwelling on how Lynch showed up and just took the belt, and that was the end of it for Belair. So they just need to correct course quickly.
If they tell the story that Belair is just, one up being Becky left and right, and Becky showing great frustration, then Becky cheats to win, and then runs to the back with her title. Like, I got away with that one, and Belair's standing in the ring again. It's an empty feeling, but it's like, okay, I can't wait for Belair to get a rematch. She deserves one, and boom, the draft happens. They're separated, and now you're at least a year away from those two wrestling each other again, and you have Belair go on and dominate on Raw and be the centerpiece babyface champion there. You have Becky hold this title for a very long time on SmackDown, and maybe then it feels like a big deal later when they cross paths again. That might be WWE psychology, is give Becky a win, but have Belair dominate, 80% of the match and have Becky cheat to win because she's scared, and then the draft separates them. I guess it'd be my most likely scenario, but maybe they just stay on the same brand and they do rematches and Belair ends up getting the better of Becky in the end. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Becky loses and goes to Raw. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out either, if USA Network is sensitive to not having all these big returning stars, and Vince, quelled their concerns by going, well, we brought Becky back short term on SmackDown, but, she's going to be on Raw by October. So, relax. I think that's more likely than what they tease tonight with Roman switching brands. So I'm glad I don't know. I don't want to know ahead of time, but I think there's the whole array of possibilities is out there.
Yeah.
William, go ahead, Mike. Yep.
Yeah. One last thing. I my gut instinct is kind of like, and maybe this is how you should feel as a fan, or as a viewer on the outside. I'd like Belair to get the title back because it was twisted how it was taken from her in the first place. But on the other hand, I am a proponent of long title reigns because short title reigns or frequent title changes tend to cheapen the title and make everything feel a little bit less special. So I'm a little torn,
I'm totally an advocate for long title reigns, but I think on occasion, having like three title changes in 4 weeks, just wrestlers who are so even they trade, it's like it also makes you believe anything can happen anytime. I wouldn't do that very much, and I don't like just wrestlers having short reigns with cheap finishes, and it's just to pop a rating. But like, I do want to like every once in a while have a situation that feels realistic, which is in a best of seven series in the NBA Finals or the NHL Finals. It's often 3-3 before you get to the deciding game. I'm not against that happening now and then either. I don't think it should be the standard thing because, in general, I think having a dominant champion who's knocking down opponents either through valor and sportsmanship because they're a babyface or through conniving and cheating if they're a heel is better most of the time. I just don't think the timing is right for that to be the case here, but maybe if they both stay on SmackDown, we'll see that. Maybe Belair wins it. Becky then gets it back through nefarious means, and then they settle it once and for all, and Belair gets it back at the Rumble or something. I mean, I'm not totally against that storyline as long as, sort of like distraction finishes, they don't just decide to do it all the time because it's the thing that they decide to do all the time. William, back to you for either a follow-up on that or a final topic otherwise.
One thing, I know there's kind of a long shot, but I kind of had a thought with the whole Naomi and Sonya thing that, we've seen Sonya and Pierce butt heads with the Bloodline before, and it kind of feels weird that Jimmy or the Usos in general wouldn't step in to try to help her get on TV. So do you guys see that maybe this being like a – because people have talked before about Naomi joining the Bloodline. Would you guys see potentially this like being like a segue for her to get into the bloodline somehow?
I was thinking that until like last week and especially this week, Mike. I mean, this just seems like Sonya's a heel, Naomi's a face. Sonya's like, you keep dropping the ball, you got a nice ring entrance, but you keep losing. There's still a way for them to get to that point, and I'm, intrigued by it because, it's their family. I'm getting the sense that they just don't think that it's a good fit and that's not where they want to go. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's been speculated on for a while, and when I first heard about that idea, I was for it because I like the idea, And I feel it's kind of rare in WWE to introduce like a female into an all-male faction. You know, it's a it's a unique dynamic that you don't see a whole lot. And I also like the idea of Naomi, who, if you're not pushing her to the extreme like Sonya has been, she comes off as really naturally kind, and that would be a good dynamic with the bloodline. And if she doesn't have the muscle to speak up for herself, maybe politically backstage, maybe it would do her good to align with a group that does. So thinking about WWE, though, I feel like if that's what they had in mind, they maybe already would have done it. And because they're not that good at letting things simmer, you know what I mean? But
like Ray and Dominic, they're good at that, but it's not typical of them, and that's why the Ray Dominic thing simmering stands out.
Right, yeah. And yeah, I don't know. But if he, Wade, we've talked about Heyman's involvement with the Roman Reigns story since it started, and why it that might be a big part of why it has a different feeling from the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And from Raw. And so because of that, I still wouldn't rule it out, in spite of what I said about they would have done it already. Because if Heyman is involved and it's in, she's somehow in his web, so to speak, then yeah, I wouldn't rule that out, and I would still be for that.
And it's there to still steer their way towards, because Naomi's fighting the system and trying to do it the right way, and just getting stopped. You know, she's going about it the right way to get her chance, and it's not working for her. And you could see that causing her to turn towards the dark side, or you know, turn towards family to help. And I mean, there is a way to tell that story. It just doesn't. I mean, maybe some people would see this as making it more likely that happens. But Deville was so clearly the heel here, not just sort of an oblivious, distracted authority figure, which is what she had been for a while. Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't prioritizing you. It's different than you're just a ring entrance. And then once you challenged her to a match and Deville's like, oh, I'd wipe the mat with you, it just took it away from seeming like they're heading towards Naomi, where Sonya's more a bystander to Naomi's journey, and now she's like the main opposing, you know, the main antagonist to it. So, yeah, it just seems like things went different route this week. William, any closing words for us?
No, that was all for me, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
Cool. Yep, always good for me. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, up next we'll go to Greg in Kansas City. Greg, thanks for calling. What stood out on SmackDown for you tonight?
Man, what a conversation. I'm going to go back to a couple of the things that were discussed before. I agree with the sentiments about Montez Ford, that he would not be in that position if he was not seen as someone who can be elevated in the future. So I agree with that assessment. And on the topic of the whole Liv Morgan thing, I think one thing that could have been to her benefit was not have her lose a pointless TV match to somebody who she's not even going to be facing on Sunday. I mean, that's one thing that could have been done for her. And then on top of that, I'll say myself, I'm a fan of her. Like, I'm a supporter of hers big time. Like, I mean, she's always posting videos of training and working hard. I mean, she clearly wants to be, really wants, like, you know, but people, they say people want it, quote unquote, like, she wants it, so like I'm rooting for her. And I thought of this way, maybe she'll end up. I thought she could be pushed in this upcoming Queen of the Ring tournament. Then we'll have a problem with the whole another reason, because then she can wrestle in the finals in an unnamed country on a Thursday afternoon wearing a long sleeve shirt and pants.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah. So anyway, on
gallows humor, I guess. Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I wanted to elaborate on those thoughts that were brought up. One of the great things about calling in here is you pick up on things that have already been discussed. So, and then my other point will be this. This is what I really called in about, is that we talk all the time ad nauseum about things that AEW does better than WWE, but I would say one area where it's undeniable, and I'm even thinking about like the elevation of Montez Ford in the main event match on television, is there's one area that WWE undeniably has an advantage over AEW. There's a lot of reasons for this, and it may be something taken into consideration when we consider demographics and audience skewerings and what direction. But WWE has an advantage in terms of diversity, both in terms of racial and gender. And I feel like that is very, very much on display on a show like SmackDown. Look at the NXT commercials that were aired tonight. It's all about the women on Tuesday night. I mean, you can think whatever you want about that, but it feels like that is a huge advantage that WWE has. And, you know, for all the issues and all of the problems that have been had over the decades, not to say all those problems aren't gone now, but, like, that is an area where there is a distinct advantage, and it really, really showed, I think, tonight. And it's been showing for
a while,
but it's really stuck out to me tonight. And then you look at that Raw main event as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look at this week and who was featured in Montez Ford, Big E, Bobby Lashley on NXT, Hit Row, Odyssey Jones. You got Naomi making her case here. Apollo Crews in a title match. You know, they're represented. You know, I mean, and it's not to say there's a long track record or that they're represented as well as they should be, all that. But right now, you're right. I mean, you look at the three shows this week. And then you add in the women, and they've just done had a longer NXT and developmental has produced more star women wrestlers than men. I mean, in terms of kind of from the ground up, and that's one of the great legacies of, I guess, NXT 1.0 is all the talent that WWE has and still has on NXT, but the ones who are also on Raw and SmackDown. Mike, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Especially if you take just simple snapshots of each promotion, WWE is like head and shoulders beyond AEW in terms of like a broader representation, I think. I mean, just beyond its black talent, it's just broaden it to people of color. Now you're including the Bloodline and Nakamura just looking at tonight's show.
Yeah.
On top of the talent that Wade mentioned. And, I think Greg was getting at, like, yeah, WWE's past is a little bit checkered, and that might be, I'm probably being polite there, just putting it that way, but that might where AEW will have a long-term advantage, because one thing, in spite of looking at the snapshots right now, present day, you also have to acknowledge that AEW is a very young promotion, and they're never going to have the history of portraying certain people the way that WWE has. That's never going to be in AEW's past. And who knows what the snapshot comparison might look like in a year or 2 years from now. And that's just a year or 2 years is but a fraction of the time that WWE's been in business. And I feel like it's only in recent history that there's been this flourish of the broadening of diversity. So I think AEW is just doing their best and taking their time, I guess. I don't know. That's an optimistic way to put it.
I guess they're not for – I think they want ratings, and they happened to be able to sign Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, and CM Punk, and they're – like white dudes. If you know, Montez Ford's contract came up, if Big E's contract came up, I mean, I think they probably would have signed them and pushed them. You know, it's somewhat happenstance. It's one roster. It's now two shows, but it's one roster. WWE has three. I think with AEW, it's good to nudge them. It's good to remind them. It's good to be disappointed in them. But it's also good to be patient and understanding that, you know, there isn't egregious oversights, and there isn't burial, and there isn't negative portrayals. And so it just comes down to scouting and opportunity that sometimes is happenstance to sign established names. And, you know, I mean, Tony Khan loves the Acclaimed, and Private Party are regulars on the show, and Scorpio Sky is a regular on the show. You know, Powerhouse Hobbs, it was, you know, in the opening match on Rampage tonight against CM Punk. It's not nothing, but I don't look and go, other than, you know, maybe they could have done more with Scorpio Sky a couple of times early on. I don't think there's been any great oversights on their part. But anyway, I don't want to get too deep into AEW right now on the SmackDown Post Show, but there's some thoughts on that. Greg, back to you.
Yeah, and you know, obviously with AEW, and I won't go there, just like you said, as far as the SmackDown ratio. But, I mean, the pieces are definitely there, I mean, with some of the talent in place, obviously. And I think that, you know, you're going to see more of that as time goes on. But I think right now at the moment it's just a glaring advantage that WWE has. And these people who are positioned in top spots in WWE, it feels like they're not forced there. And it's actually the opposite of it. I mean, I feel that all these people have gotten there based on merit, and it's been well-deserved. So, I mean, it was just something I noticed very obvious right now that at the moment I think there's a big advantage. So I wanted to bring that into the conversation. And then I guess my final point will be that Becky Lynch, she's doing everything she can to get this character over and as hated as possible. I agree with the thought about the music changing. Yeah, I think the music should change if she's going to really sink her teeth into this. And I think that, honestly, I think she should probably lose Sunday, but I don't know if WWE is going to go in that direction. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right, great. Greg, always good to hear from you. Thank you. Our number, by the way, if you want to join us, it is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That lets us know that you are on hold and want to be on the show. All right, we will move next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind after SmackDown tonight? Go ahead, Kyle. Kyle, are you there?
Thank you at all. Hello?
Oh, there we are. Now I can hear you.
My phone's going in and out, so.
Yeah,
so Becky's not losing the belt. She's not. I don't really – I can't honestly – you know, they did a thing for SummerSlam, and then she loses it a month later. That just kills everything they did last month. So, realistically, they shouldn't have done what they did last month, but since they did, they went down this road. If she loses the championship on Sunday, what does that say about Becky Lynch winning the title last month for no reason? And then it'll make Bianca what? It'll just kill everything he did last month, and it'll make no sense. So realistically, it's a good theory, but at the end of the day, Becky's going to retain. Bianca might as well go to Raw, like I said the last few weeks, because I just think because with Bianca, she had some bad luck ever since Bayley got injured, and then she had the thing with really after WrestleMania, really pretty much with Bayley. I thought that their matches, for me personally, that wasn't all that great. And then Bayley got injured, and she had to introduce Carmella into it. And then they had that one match, and then Sasha came back, and then she disappeared. And now Becky is back, and now she won a title fight. So Bianca has a bad luck on SmackDown, and at this point, I think this is best for everyone involved in here. It's just for Bianca to go to Raw and have them separate for a while, and then have, you know, and just, I don't know, I feel like, because to me, it just feels like I would love to see Bianca as champion, but again, like I said the last few weeks, I just think it will be the Raw Women's Champion, not the SmackDown Women's Champion. And with Becky herself, for me personally, I will personally never boo Becky Lynch, because she is that good, and I do not view Becky as a heel. She's been this type of character before, where she thinks that she's the best, but she's doing it in a heel way. So I don't see the difference there with how she was a babyface a couple years ago. So I don't see the difference in Becky at all, just because she thought she should be a heel, which I was like, okay, sure, whatever. It's like, I don't buy it. And even though she's really good, I enjoy Becky herself. She's committed into her role, and that's fine. That's great. She's awesome, you know. But again, I don't think people don't want to boo Becky. I have a sense of that, especially from what happened tonight and happened the last few weeks, as time she comes out. So, I don't know. That's my thought. It feels like it's a great theory, but I just feel like at the end of the day, I think it will be best for everyone, for Bianca to go to Raw. That's my thought.
Mike, I kind of said what I need to say about Becky and Bianca. Anything about Kyle's case?
No, it that makes sense to me. And
yeah.
I know Becky's a natural star. They put the belt on her. I feel like the biggest injustice is just the transition. If that's how it's going to go, like Kyle has laid it out, I don't transition, because it just feels like they did it behind the scenes. Like they just said, you know what, we're just going to move the title, and then we're going to move Belair. Like, that's what it felt like. It didn't feel, it's not going to, felt like a genuine feud with a quality outcome. It just feels like a swap of a belt from one to another and then moving one of the wrestlers away. And that's not great programming, I don't think. And it doesn't help Bianca at all. It could potentially help Becky in terms of a heel persona, but she doesn't need that kind of help, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. These are just new wrinkles I feel in what we've already talked about, but yeah.
And it was supposed to be Sasha to begin with anyway. So that's the whole other problem. This was supposed to be Sasha Banks. And I don't know if she's going to hopefully show, I don't know if she's going to show up next week or not, but if she's going to be part of the draft, hopefully, you know, that's the whole other issue is where is Sasha? That's still another, she likes to disappear every single month feels like too. So that's the whole other problem there.
What else, Kyle?
And so let's see what, I really love the Demon. I love Finn Balor. It's kind of, it's about the same theme with the whole Bianca theme. Balor is great. I think Balor's, I love to see him as the Demon. I think this match is going to be fun to see, but I just feel like he's going to lose too. And I would hope for Finn Balor anyway, coming out of, you know, Extreme Rules, heading to SmackDown, and he can recover. I think he will, and to do, but I don't know what else, like, a next theme for Balor at when he loses on Sunday, then what would be next for Balor? It will seem kind of backwards. I feel like he was supposed to do something else before being into Roman Reigns. Or actually, I think it's a whole Demon thing itself. Had he not been the Demon right now with the Extreme Rules match, he then done it, I don't know, and whatever the December pay-per-view is going to be, whatever it is. Maybe that's what he should have done. I don't know, but it feels like, though I like this, it's the Becky thing again, where it's like, it's kind of unfortunate. But I would still enjoy the match. I'll still enjoy Balor himself. But it's like Reigns is in a whole other generation right now, I mean, a whole other atmosphere of what he's doing right now within his character. But what do you think about all that?
Yeah, Mike. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, just I think the Balor Demon match against Reigns is intriguing but in sort of a flash bang way, it'll be cool to watch, and then it almost won't matter once it's done, except for the prolonged gloating rights Reigns might have about being the one to put down the Demon, and Kyle mentioned, like, after that, like, there is no after that. I don't think there is such a thing for Balor. And I don't mean permanently. I just mean, I think Balor's role right now is put over Reigns at Extreme Rules until Reigns moves on to something bigger. And I doubt that there's something in the works for Balor after that, you know. And if they want to use him, good, they should, because he's valuable. But based on how things have been going for him recently, in recent years, I don't see that. I think, like I said, I think this is a stopgap.
And it's fine. I like that. I mean, like you said, a notch on Reigns' list of opponents that he's defeated, being the Demon, helps elevate the legend of Roman Reigns. And Balor can easily get drafted over to Raw and just, you know, do something else against somebody else in a fresh scenario. And he will have gained from losing to Reigns, but main eventing a pay-per-view. Nonetheless, Kyle, any final topic from you?
I actually didn't really think about that, Valerie. That could happen too. I think my last thing too is about, you know, Liv Morgan. And I personally like Liv. I hope she, and the thing with her coming out and doing this, I didn't really notice that. I don't really pay attention to that hard of how some of these brothers come out, just depending on who it is. But it's Liv Morgan or Becky or whoever comes out, I don't really focus on that. When it's like Carmelo or someone like even Rita, like not that I notice it because they're just doing it so much. But Liv Morgan herself, I think she's great. And I think a future feud between Liv and Becky Lynch, I would like to see that as well. So that's my last point with the front call.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kyle. I think part of the key with Liv Morgan is just come up with something that people will remember. Like, to me, she's just in that default mode of shake your stuff and smile and seem happy and sexy going to the ring. It's like, that's not something that identifies who she is. She's been booking as WWE booking has not served her well. She's been all over the place. And it's like, figure out what she's going to be. And if she's going to be a babyface who they're going to try to push to the top, figure out what it is about her. You know, she's somebody who needs kind of that EST type thing. It's not, you know, Belair's just at another level when it comes to charisma and presence. And with Liv, like, kind of figure out what her thing is. You know, they've established it with Toni Storm. You know, she's old-time rock and roller. She's hanging out with Boogs and Nakamura, and it just feels natural. It doesn't feel forced, and they've told that story during her matches, not in a way that if you blinked, you might have missed it, but it's there. It has been there. So what is Liv's thing? You know, she has seemed like an aspiring, talented, motivated wrestler who doesn't leap off the screen in search of a gimmick. But it's time to figure something out other than that default ring entrance. That's my point, and that's why I'm pointing it out and trying to kind of almost shame them into changing it so she can have a top-level gimmick. All right, we'll go next to Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, thanks so much for calling. What stood out on SmackDown for you tonight?
Thank you very much. How are you guys doing tonight? I got to tell you, I think the discussion on this show is actually 10 times better than the show was tonight. it's been really great tonight. I'm highly impressed, and like Greg, I want to comment on all the comments that have been made. One thing I will say is, as far as audience reaction stuff tonight, remember where they were in Philadelphia. So it's kind of like being in Montreal. Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. But quick on the Liv stuff, I almost wish she would go back to that kind of wild child attitude that she had when they first started with the Riot Squad, where she kind of had a mischievous side to her. She was, you know, baby face-ish, but and you know she was wearing long pants and you know and a rather conservative top, you know, and stuff and. That, to me, that's what first attracted me to Liv Morgan as a fan of watching wrestling, was that she, you know, she was kind of like this wild child, kind of, you know, 70s, 80s wild child who's been transported into the 2020s. And it just kind of, I thought it was neat. I thought it was a nice angle. And unfortunately, they sent her away and she got some augmentation. And then they had her sitting in a bathtub, and then the kind of lover of Lana, and, I mean, it's been very convoluted, and I think you're very right, Wade. I think, you know, this whole kind of shake and bake she's doing is so reminiscent of the Attitude Era diva women, you know, Nikki Bella, just it's to a certain extent, it's jarring to me watching. I mean, listen, I'm a hetero guy, and she's beautiful, and I like watching her, but not as a wrestler. I want her to you know, kind of be more a wrestler. The same thing with Bianca skipping to the ring. You know, it's both of those things kind of are jarring to me as kind of, wait, this woman's going to go fight someone now?
Exactly. Yep.
And it was something I was actually thinking about. I was listening to you and Zach today on my drive through the beautiful Green Mountains. And it struck me that, and I remember when Ronda Rousey came out and was wrestling on WWE, she had her braids. You know, she had her MMA braids.
Yeah.
And it's so jarring to me to see these women like Carmella wrestling with this, massive hair. If they're athletes, they would, you know, be athletes, you know, tie your hair back. And it's kind of like what Shayna does. Is she comes out, she's got her hair back, and then when she does her leg stomp, you know, arm stomp, she'll take her tie out and throw it down. But she at least looks like when she's coming out that she's ready to fight, not go out and party.
Yep. And I think there's a happy medium. I think there's a happy medium that I'm willing to accept between, you know, a real fight situation like MMA and what we've seen at the most, you know, extreme Divas era of WWE and what TNA Impact Wrestling, you know, did in what I think was just sexist and shameful portrayal of women sometimes in the way that they were objectified, you know, a decade ago or so. There's a happy medium. You can still have, you know, it is pro wrestling, but I you got to have that semblance of something other than what I think Liv portrayed tonight. And yeah, a good kind of recap of the journey that she's been on. And I think, you know, it accentuates where they just put some, you know, make it look like you put some thought into it. I don't need lace lagging and shaking your stuff. That's not a gimmick. Let's figure something out for her if you're serious about her.
And I wonder about the Riot Squad. If, admittedly, I don't know anything about the genesis of that faction, but it feels like Ruby Riot at the time was like the kind of the focal point and maybe where the energy came from, and then yeah. Liv sort of was assimilated into that. And I totally agree with Nick that that's an interesting portrayal, but then when Riot Squad is dissolved, then it's sad that they just say, well, she's a hot blonde, so give her the default. And everybody on staff knows what that means. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's just she's the default blonde now.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out. And what's bothersome is how unoriginal an idea that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not even like a crappy, fresh idea. It's like a crappy, unoriginal idea. And so that is bothersome. And I also occasionally think about what Nick was saying about, yeah, if this were a real fight, none of the women would look like this. They'd all have either really short hair or their hair braided up, like you said, like a Ronda Rousey does. But I'll accept the medium, like Wade said, the happy medium. It is pro wrestling, and you want, like, guys wouldn't have long hair either, but we didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mentioning it now because it's a glamour industry, you know,
as
much as anything else. So that sort of thing is a part of the total package. And if women are in there having like a hell of a match, I'm not going to complain about their long hair flying around. You know, I'll just accept it because it's pro wrestling, you know.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's almost like what Bayley, when she was, you know, down in NXT, you know, she had her little, you know, what is it, a side pony or whatever. But
yeah.
You know, what they could do is when they're doing their backstage segments, their hair could be out, and then as they come out but right before they come out, you know, just do a ponytail, you know, just tie their hair back, you know, or you know, some sort of headband. Like you watch the women's soccer. And Alex Morgan has incredibly long hair, but she's wearing a headband and she's got a tie in it. And, you know, and then she's running down the field after the soccer ball and hitting it with her head. You know, there is a middle space there, but I understand it is a visual thing, and I understand that.
I kind of hate to talk about stuff like this since I'm clearly an outsider of the business, but I think it also serves like at real functions in a match, like having long hair loose in terms of communicating with who you're working with and also sort of softening blows in a way where hair can block the light that might otherwise be shown. If that makes sense, on particular bumps that they're taking.
Well, I could imagine that hair would also, if you're taking a punch and you're swinging your head back, you know, to absorb the blow, your hair flying and then water flying off it can exaggerate the visual impact of the kick or something.
For sure. Yeah, it looks like a still frame from a comic book or something.
Right. Wade, you got to get your pencil out here, and next time you talk to McCarthy, you have to ask him what it was like in the writer's room when they were trying, you know, what's the driving force behind the way that the women are portrayed. I mean, I would be personally interested in that. Just that inside, you know. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and it seems the build for this Extreme Rules has been very mediocre, and it builds into a thought process that I've been having recently over the past, really 2 years, but now much more now that they're on Peacock with the pay-per-views, and they're not pay-per-views. It's like I'm sitting there watching AEW and going, okay, I got to spend $50 this week. Ooh, okay, but this looks really good, so I'll do it. It really seems to me that the WWE, and it may be a smart move for financially and such, is they gave away matches on Raw that could easily have been pay-per-view match, you know, with the triple threat. And there's, at least to announce so far, there's no Big E match on this Extreme Rules. It seems that except for the Big Four, they almost look at the pay-per-views now as just another TV show. And it's one that they don't even really need because they're not going to get any ratings for because Peacock's not going to publish those numbers. And I remember back in the late 90s where, you know, WCW would have a pay-per-view. Then 2 weeks later, it would be WWF's turn. And my friends and I would go to people's houses and buy the pay-per-view, and someone would bring the Chinese food, and it was, you know, this event, you know, I think it was $34 back then for the regular pay-per-views. And now the WWE pay-per-views are just another TV show, and nothing, and they're almost seem to be falling into their own mess of just not making these shows something that are must watch.
Yeah, I when WWE Network launched, you know, Jason Paul and I on the flagship would hammer the point home. WWE has as much incentive to get 2 million people to spend $10 a month as they had to get 300,000 people to spend $50 a month. Like, you do the math, there was, you know, it's a lower price point, but that means you can attract even more people at a lower point. So they had every incentive to get the best match out there. Their goal was to make more money off of having more people pay $10 and have that multiplication lead to more revenue than when it was just hundreds of thousands, a million plus buying WrestleMania, but otherwise hundreds of thousands buying the other ones. You know, they have every incentive to do it. They don't now. They got paid a flat fee from Peacock. I mean, so I'm sorry. If you get a flat fee and you get paid once a year for your job, and there's no accountability or, you know, it's limited, you're going to have ebbs and flows of your effort. You know, there's going to be times you're like, yeah, I'm going to try really hard. You know, I might show up today. I might not. It's just like, that's how WWE feels about pay-per-views. Like, it does feel like they've stepped it down. It's not a TV show in the sense that they're not hyping, you know, there's a lot more people watching than would in a pay-per-view era paying top dollar because of the Peacock audience and how free or cheap it is. But it's still a blend of wrestlers from both brands, matches from both brands, and they're, you know, built up for weeks, not just 1 week or 1 hour like tonight with Montez and Roman. It still feels like different than a TV show and in some ways a bigger deal. But it's not as big of a deal as when they were desperately trying to get you to spend, you know, $30, $40, $50, pick your era, and their financial well-being was based around running a hot angle and having a loaded show. And they wouldn't have Big E win a title and not on the show if they were selling it. But they're not selling it. It's just a less important part of the Peacock package. And so, you know, we see a diminished lineup. But not all pay-per-views were great either. You know, I mean, there wasn't ebb and flow to those, but, you know, that wasn't – it never felt like it was out of we don't care. It was more out of it just not working out this month. Mike, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel – I mean, maybe this goes without saying, but the biggest quantum leap is when you go from 4 pay-per-views a year to 12 or more, maybe like 14 or 15. And they just – everything will inherently feel less special once you commit to that. And that happened way before Peacock or the WWE Network, but that changes the feel of everything. And I think another issue is WWE's aversion to doing jobber or squash matches. Because when you eliminate that from your TV cards, and if you're WWE, you have like 2.5 tiers of talent, and you put matches on these shows that, like Nick said, would be pay-per-view caliber, but that's all you have because they're only willing to use the top talent. You know what I mean? They don't have scrubs coming in to make the top talent look awesome. So all you get is like the non-scrubs, and that also makes the pay-per-views less special because you see the top talent in lengthy matches on free TV. So that, I think that's another big factor in why the pay-per-views like this one feel the way they do.
Well put. Nick, any closing words from you?
Yeah, last on Glow, on Naomi, I was definitely thinking that this was it. They were going to have, while Sonya was out there, have Roman's music hit. You know, and have him come out and just say, I'm the head of the table, get her a mat. You know, do something like that. But since that didn't happen, I think you're right, Wade, and I think this is kind of going to go off to the side and be a, ultimately, there will be a match between Naomi and Sonya, I think. But I think I think tonight was the night where they could have done it. But here, right after that, they have Roman coming out of the dressing room, Jimmy, Naomi's husband, who they're always watching television in that room, had just seen his wife be totally derided and downgraded and abused and dismissed, and he doesn't even react. He reacts more to Otis and Gable than he does to his wife being embarrassed on national television. And so I said, okay, it might still happen. I'd love to see her as part of the, you know, in a black outfit or something like that. I thought it would be great, but I think after tonight, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add, but, you know, I think you and I are kind of on the same page on that. Mike, anything you might want to add to what Nick said?
Just that I think that would be an exciting moment to see the bloodline come to her aid. That would be an exciting moment.
Oh, it would have been great. I was looking. I was going, there's time. Do it now.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, I mean, there was that opening, and, you know, by the end, it was like, okay, you know, if you were thinking that, you're like, well, that's certainly not what they were going for.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to let you guys go. Have a good weekend. And as I said, this show tonight was great. Calls were great. I think, as I said, it's better than the actual television show.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right, cool. Nick, we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. All right, let's. We're still waiting for our on-site correspondent to call. We haven't heard from Kyle, who was going to get a ticket from a friend and go. So if he doesn't call us, well, we missed out. That's maybe something came up. We'll keep an eye out for him and go to Javier, and then after that, some of our mailbag questions. You can still call us, by the way, 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad or email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's see, Javier, what music happened? There you go. Couple notes for you. How's it going, Javier?
Pretty good. How's it going, Mike? How's it going, Wade?
Good.
I'm going to go ahead and wade into, no pun intended, into the Liv Morgan thing. The biggest question I would have is what is – because I'm a big perspective guy, and the most important perspective in this is Liv Morgan herself. I'd like to know what her idea is, what she's trying to portray, because, you know, I took time to peruse her Twitter to get an idea, mainly seeing, like, the stuff that, you know, the inspirational messages that she retweeted and stuff. And from the impression I get, is if you remember when they started doing the whole her in a bathtub stuff and she cut a promo where she said, this is the real me. I've been trying to figure out who I am. I don't know who I am. This is the real me. That is what kind of is coming across when I read, like, her inspirational messages and stuff like that, where it's like she's trying to figure it out. You know, a lot of the stuff is keep your eyes on me, keep your attention on me. You know, I'm about to, you know, with good energy and good spirits, you know, I will evolve into, you know, I'm ready to break out, basically. It's kind of like her thing. And I think she's just trying to figure out how to do it. And there is a level of sexiness in her tweets, too. So I think that is a component of what she wants to get across. I just don't know if she knows what kind, if you understand what I'm saying. So I'd be more, you know, like, what do you want? And, you know, if like, you have, like, your Laurinaitis or your Pritchard, you know, pushing in a different direction unfairly, that's a different story. I'm not there behind the scenes, which is why, you know, I'm reticent to pass judgment on the WWE. So if this is kind of like her trying to figure herself out and figure out how she wants to feel out there, then, you know, I think that's ultimately up to her.
And then it's up to me to say, I think it's a terrible idea to look like you're trying to win votes for a wet t-shirt content when you're trying to stand out on a show where Carmella and Eva Marie are doing that gimmick in their heels. So I would say some wrestlers might be inspired on a personal level of what they want to do and they want to be themselves. And that's not a way to get to a main event spot. That's a way to seem like you're oblivious and retro and derivative and not really searching for something that makes sense for this era.
And in this particular case, the fact that she is facing Carmella over that, you know, that also works against, the current storyline that she's involved in. And I think they just haven't given the storyline enough time and enough, you know, they just put them together and they haven't really, really explained where this, because, you know, I'm running the primer and I'm like, okay, so where exactly is this story coming from, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and if it's a case where, like, because I mean, this is easy, like, because you have Carmella coming out and saying, I'm beautiful. And if that is something that Liv Morgan's struggling with, she just says, you know, she could just say, you know, you don't have to ask people, you just have to be yourself. And I think they haven't been given the time or, you know, to really explain what's going on there. Because, again, it's just like there's like nothing there for that feud.
Yeah, and I'm nudging them to get to it. They put a lot of thought into Happy Corbin up here. Like, we got him shopping, and they brought a guy, another wrestler in. Like, put some thought into Liv Morgan. Don't have her just, wiggle and dance to the ring, smiling, and she didn't blow kisses, but that felt that was coming next, and lacy underwear with her words on her ass. Like, put some thought into it. She's going to be on a pay-per-view, and, you know, Becky's behind her being a top act, and she's got good reviews. Like, put some time in and figure something out. If she can puke on command, then let's make that her thing. Give her something.
Oh, man. All you right. Brought back those memories, Wade. How dare you?
She can burp. She can burp. No.
Oh, my God. You just made me think of Natalia's farting. Oh, my God. I wasn't even watching during that period.
Who had the wart on their face?
It was JBL's assistant, I believe.
Oh, Julian. Julian Hall.
Ah. Yeah, I mean.
Or Hill. Was it Hill or Hall?
Yeah.
Whatever. All right, Javier, I've got you off track. Go
Hall
ahead.
Right. Yeah, Hall, yeah, Hall sounds right. Is Ray the worst father officially?
No, he's a flawed father, and many of us can relate.
I mean, because that line, man, that line, I'm like, okay, that's it. He turned heel from when he said, you know, yeah, sure, I'll give you your space, you know, so you can consider how wrong you are. I'm like, oh, my God.
I mean,
I'm like, yeah, throwing you a lot with Sami Zayn.
I don't think Ray is evil, but, I mean, he is definitely, you know, the overly critical Little League dad. I don't know. I mean, the advice for Dominic is, like, go work the indie circuit for 3 years, but that's, instead of riding my coattails and, you know, go by the name of I don't know, Dominic Bronson or something. I don't know. All right, go ahead. I'm here all
Braun
weekend.
Breaker, maybe? I'm thinking that. Do you think they might end up splitting at the draft? Because that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, it would sort of break the storyline up, but I don't know. Ray could then like he could be like the helicopter parent. He uses all his brand crossover passes right away. Like, well, you know,
yeah,
Ray's
just smart.
Yeah. Then he buys tickets. Like, Ray's not allowed in the building anymore backstage, but there he is in the front row. He's on StubHub and he's, you know, yelling at Dominic from ringside. They could have fun with that. Is Ray selling popcorn? Is that him in the concession? Is he or just yelling at Dominic?
With the mask on.
Yes.
Speaking of draft shenanigans, it'd be hilarious if Naomi finally gets her match and she gets traded to Raw.
Yes. Well, I mean, Deville are still, they're kind of floating between brands. So it would still be an issue, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that she went to SmackDown to get matches, then she gets traded back to Raw. That'd be fun. One of the things that I really liked was, did you notice how Heyman was a lot more assertive this night?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, particularly when he welcomed Pierce and Deville to Philadelphia, like this is his town.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That
he
was cool.
Really pushing
I really
Extreme and Philadelphia. Like, you know, that's still Philadelphia, and we're going to, you know, show him you can be Extreme. And, yeah, there was a – Paul was – I thought I had a little spring in his step being in Philly.
Tonight was – I also noticed they did maybe they've done this since they've gone back to live arenas, but it's the first time I've really noticed that they did the full postcard lineup of Philadelphia, all these tourist destinations. Like, they basically did a little, like, a 15-second commercial for the city. And it's that old thing of how they love going to certain cities and telling you about it. And then, if they come to town, you don't even know where they are.
Classic. Unless Bianca's from there.
Right. Yeah.
No offense, Knoxville.
Knoxville.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Going back to Naomi, moved on from that. The one problem I had with that whole segment was that Deville was pretty much speaking everything I've ever had thought of Naomi. You know, that it's the entrance, and then, you know, and it really felt like that Adam Cole promo with Karrion Kross, you know, for
mm-hmm.
me. So I was like nodding my head, yes.
I get Sonya wanting, you know, scripting Sonya or, you know, prompting Sonya to kind of defend herself. I hope they turn that into something. You know, like, it would be good for Naomi to make her case and not be in denial or, you know, not want those facts stated. And, you know, it'd be nice if they told a sports like story, which is, you know, Naomi goes, I have feel like I've, you know, let myself down and I have better aspirations and I have been training and I have been learning and I think I'm going to be better. That's why I want a match so badly is, you know, I'm asking for a match because I'm ready to improve upon what I've shown before. Like, that's okay. I'm okay scripting someone to say I haven't lived up to my potential, but I'm better now. And make your case for it.
That's a story of personal growth, and that would be a long stretch.
Yes.
Yeah, because the idea of her, because I liked the idea originally of her joining the Bloodline, but the one, like, gnawing thing I had in the back of my head of that not happening was the fact that she's popular with the kids, you know, the whole, you know, it really is about the entrance, you know? People getting really hyped up for the entrance, and then the match starts, and it's like, I don't know if I haven't seen her in a while, but she's still doing those stupid running kicks that I absolutely hate. You know, it's like time to, you know, move on to something, you know, to, you know, improve. Because that's kind of the thing. It's like, was her background as a dancer? Because it kind of feels like that's kind of her thing in the ring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Wasn't she on a dance team? Wasn't she on a sports dance team? Maybe Orlando Magic?
Yeah, I think a basketball team.
And Brodus Clay and all that, yeah.
You know, which is a good starting point, but, like, I would like to see more, you know, out of her.
Absolutely,
which is why I've never really, you know, I've never really gotten into her. And I had to rewrite the entire Roman Reigns thing because I did not know that it was already an Extreme Rules match. I missed that part. I watched the ending of that match, and all the toys come out. I'm like, how is this not an Extreme Rules match if they're pulling out the weapons now? I'm assuming they're going to make it between now and then. I hadn't known that they had changed it already. So, but yeah, I agree with that. They did like a – I mean, that was like pretty much as bog standard of a – go home as you can possibly do. I mean, show the weapons,
yeah.
Show what's possible of going through a table, you know, present the demon. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Like rather like, you know, nothing special. Didn't feel like they were counter programming anything there.
Yeah, it very much was. And that's why I led with that. I'm fine with that.
Because my brother had asked me, because he got Riddick Moss and Sabatelli confused with, he's like, wasn't Riddick Moss over in AEW? It was Sabatelli, if people are questioning why Riddick Moss has disappeared, because he actually had an ACL tear, so he was out for a year. He just came back last week.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with giving somebody like him a chance to show what he can do in a supporting role where there's not a ton of pressure on him. You know, let's show us something.
Do you think it'll last longer than the...
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, before I miss the chance, Corbin has almost come up again. My favorite point in the Corbin vignette,
yes,
on his little shopping spree,
yeah,
maybe my favorite point in the show is when he was wearing a jacket and he held his arm out, and the salesperson had like a pitcher of water and he poured it on the treated fabric. And it runs off, and Corbin's head cocked back in as he laughed uproariously at how his sleeve was impervious to water. And that, what a fantastic reaction to that demonstration. That was my favorite part.
That was funny, too. I don't buy enough suits to know, like, how big of a deal that is, but boy, did he think that was a wonderful moment in his life.
Wait, you know the man better? It felt like he was channeling Vince McMahon with that laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Only the finest things, yeah.
That felt a – because that actually triggered that memory. I'm like, wow, but do you think Riddick Moss is going to last longer than the two guys that he had before, when he was the lone wolf with two guys, which were the former Forgotten Sons, I think?
Yeah, lone wolves, yeah.
Yeah, the lone wolf. Hopefully, I mean, you know, he could use a heater, I guess, and it, you know, should be interesting. You had mentioned something about the laugh, because, I mean, it's already getting annoying in terms of, like, you know, let's just go ahead and play this up to 11.
I do like that acknowledgement.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much it. It was a pretty slim show, I think.
I mean, it was built around – I'm trying to think if there's – I guess, Mike, formally, what'd you think of the Happy Corbin talk show format itself? Like, did it – I mean, obviously it was there to just set up Riddick Moss showing up, but does it have potential for more than that? I mean, I think Corbin might have tested some people's patience with his checklist of, you know, his wonderful – fine restaurant meal, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't know. I would be more interested to see him have an actual guest that wasn't himself.
You might get that wish. It'll be Riddick Moss next week, but yeah.
Yeah.
And then from there, yeah. I mean,
but
I'm
see him bounce off of somebody would be good.
Totally.
Like he's talented. Like just seeing him like going in there and talking about his watch and the Wagyu beef and everything. He's pretty good at it. Wade, you've talked about how he seems to kind of shine when he's out in front of the crowd, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Compared with like doing a canned promo or whatever. And yeah, I'd like to see that with a cohort, and it could be even better. It can only be better if it works, you know, if there's chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Corbin was sometimes bored and just, you know, bland when reciting lines backstage, but in front of an audience, it does seem to bring out better acting. and less of a going through the motions vibe that he definitely gave off during those times. So, yeah, I mean, Happy Corbin's been a pleasant surprise, but at the same time, I felt like downtrodden, destitute Corbin was even more fun, but it did start to, you know, feel played out. So we'll see, but at least we don't get Baron Corbin anymore. I mean, you know, it's different. The problem with Happy Corbin is it does really put him smack dab in the middle of the mid card. You know, he's the guy you feud with if you're a semi top guy, but you don't have a program against the top guy, and that's fine. You know, it probably is, you know, his destiny. But it feels like it limits him from kind of, you know, having a JBL type moment where he graduates to a new level. Javier, closing words or anything else?
Well, I forgot about the Becky thing. The thing about the Becky is I when she's out there cutting a promo about like making, you know, like not excuses, but she's backing away from a fight or something. She's doing well, but then when she cuts a promo on her opponent, it makes you want to like her because she's just saying I'm going to beat her ass, and that's, you know, in a straightforward kind of manner. So I think that's one of the things that's holding that back, unless the idea is that when the draft happens, she goes back to being a babyface. And I do think that, you know, spoilers for the, Extreme Rules primer, but, I do think that, Belair loses to go to there's gonna be an exchange so that then Belair, wrestles, Charlotte. It wins the title from her, and then she could just get her win back from Becky when they do the champion versus champion thing. That would be my guess. And she could add all names to her jacket, like, you know, every baby face wears the names of their victims on their clothes. So.
Nice.
So, that's pretty much all I had.
All right, Javier, great hearing from you. Everybody check out his primer for Extreme Rules at pwtorch.com this weekend, and his New Japan Pride podcast covering G1 along with Sean Radican, Rich Fan, Todd Martin, a lot of people on the team giving their take on the tournament as it progresses. Javier, always great talking to you. Have a great weekend heading into Sunday night.
You too. Have a good night, guys.
Great.
Bye, Javier.
All right. We'll still not seeing our correspondent show up here. So let's see. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, said, "Hey, wait a Mike, the show is pretty solid, but man, there were things I didn't like. First, you have Liv Morgan. They should be trying to build her up, give her some wins, especially going into the pay-per-view. And what happens? She looks dumb by getting distracted by Carmella and losing to Zelina, who I don't think has won a match since coming back. I just don't get WWE. Stop doing this to people. That's why no one gets over and feels important. Sorry, I had to get that off my chest. Also, I know technically the Demon is facing Roman, but I still think the top of the show, Finn should come out live and do an interview or have him give a passionate promo talking about winning the title. What do you guys think? Way to do the best. Mike, I appreciate you, my friend, and everyone go VIP. You won't regret it." Thanks, Sean. Finn Balor coming out at the top of the show and cutting a promo? I feel like in the Demon mode, it's kind of better. Promos aren't his strength, and it sort of undercuts the Demon a little bit if he's more human. And I just don't think the Demon should be cutting a long promo. So I'm going to disagree with Sean on this one and say, you know, limiting him to the kind of cool appearance at the end was the right approach.
Was Sean suggesting that Finn cut a promo at the beginning of Extreme Rules?
No, that he should come out live and do an interview on this show and give a passionate promo of winning the title Sunday.
Okay, that is different than if it were on Sunday. It might have been okay, but we already got one canned promo from Finn, right?
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, so
the origin of the Demon character. I think what they could have done is just somehow Cole and McAfee could have painted a little bit more of a picture of what will SmackDown look like if the Demon is a champion. And, you know, play that out a little bit more. And I know they don't like to do it when it's not going to happen because they don't want to get fans' hopes up and they don't want to spend time on something that isn't going to happen. But, I mean, if it's a title match, think about what it would do to Roman Reigns and the Bloodline for if the Demon Finn Balor wins the title. What does that mean come the draft? You know, yeah, just explore verbally a little bit more, so it feels like it's a thought and a talking point for the next 48 hours, and you convince people maybe if WWE's talking about it, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and the only it would still be weird even on an episode of SmackDown, if not a pay-per-view, if you have Finn doing a promo at the top of the show, and then at the end of the show, he comes out as the fiend, the demon. Then it's in my head like, oh, so we saw Finn and the demon in the same show, and it's like, all right, well, I'm going to cut this promo at the top. Now, excuse me while I put up on the makeup and everything, and I'll be back for the light show. You know, I like it when they're kind of separated, so all we see on an event is the demon or Finn Balor.
I do too. As far as Liv losing, yeah, I mean, that was dumb. I mean, it just, you know, especially with the distraction finish. I don't get it. You know, going into the pay-per-view, why would you do that? I mean, it wasn't even like a particularly strategic distraction. I mean, Carmella just was, you know, I mean, it's paint by numbers. Oh, Carmella came out to distract her by lying on the table and, you know, talking to the announcers and sort of being a presence. And now, she's going to cost her a win that doesn't matter and nobody cares about, and that's supposed to get people excited about seeing Liv beat her. Now it means less if Liv beats Carmella because Liv lost to Zelina because she couldn't stay focused on the match. I mean, it's one of the weakest aspects of WWE's match finishes is that they do this, and it's very much has the vibe of the writers just going, we just got to, you know, Vince doesn't care about this, and this is something that always gets past him. He's okay that we do this, so let's just do this. This isn't the week to put up a fight and try to reinvent the wheel. But it's a weakness in WWE, and I think, you know, viewers are largely numb to it consciously, but I think subconsciously it takes momentum out of whatever they're trying to do with putting Liv Morgan on a pay-per-view against Carmella.
Do you think that what happened tonight pretty much guarantees Liv's victory on Sunday?
Yeah. Unless they've completely lost faith in Liv and they're punishing her and they're going to write her out, which, you know, would surprise me. And then that might explain this, but no, I think Liv is past let's test her or let's bury her. I think this was just sort of that she's mad that Carmella cost her a match against Zelina. So now she's going to be really mad and beat Carmella to get revenge. And it's a wash. It doesn't matter. You know, unfortunately the win will mean less because of it then. All right, very good. Well, Mike, let's wrap up there. Thank you everybody for joining us today. If you want to be an on-site correspondent for upcoming Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDowns, drop me an email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, and put the name of the city in the email or subject line so I can do a search for it and find you. And if you're in a big city, don't assume. We have 18 volunteers because New York and Philadelphia have not come through. And, you know, we appreciate when we have on-site correspondents tell us what happens off camera, and I know our listeners do too. So I encourage you to do that. Mike, how can people follow you on social media, perhaps Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I've heard of that. It's at TheMikeShow42. And you can also find my writing at pwtorch.com. Like Wade mentioned at the top of the show, I write a weekly report for WWE's main event program. And this Sunday, you'll see me, or you'll see my report for the kickoff show for WWE's Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And I write that kickoff report for every WWE show that they do every month.
Excellent. And you can find my report Sunday night on the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So check that out at pwtorch.com. And then Greg Parks will be hosting the live post show. We'll have a link to that in my report at pwtorch.com. So check that out. He'll be live just right after the pay-per-view rounds, within a few minutes, taking calls as he's been doing for many years. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller and follow our brand at PW Torch. Until then, Wade Keller, on behalf of Mike Myers, signing off.